Tonight, James plays with it for over a year. John plays with the box. Gary balances his gut bacteria. And... fuck. I forgot what I was going to say about myself. I'm still recording, aren't I?
I'll cut it out. Just say something real quick.
And Mike eats nothing but bran muffins for 8 hours.
JamesFirstRoundPunk.com
and back again for another victorious week. This is Couch Potato Mike.
Buenos nachos, potato one.
Yes, they are very good potato nachos.
Yes, potato. Actually, if you guys ever swing by Nashville, go to a place called McNamara's Irish Pub and Family Restaurant. They have a thing called Irish nachos. They're basically
Irish
French fries with like nacho toppings on them.
Oh, that sounds
fucking delicious.
That sounds heavenly.
Yeah. Super good. Which would not be anything that you should be eating on your paleo diet that you'll hear today. Cheat day for the win. So today we've got Gary Collins back on the show. I hit him with some pretty hardball questions, some next level, like paleo 2.0.
Our first three-peat, not counting Jeff Radke.
Yeah. Jeff Dimitri has probably been on the show more than anyone else.
We only have a certain amount of time that we can let a Jamaican on the show. I'm sorry.
Yeah, man. Come play with the cheese wheels up in Wisconsin, man.
Oh, yeah. That's the Wisconsin nice thing to do.
Oh, my God. Oh, yep, Dimitri. He's like, damn it, I'll have to come back on the show for realies now. But yeah, Gary Collins, we hit him with some good ones. I learned a few things, which was awesome. Me and Gary tend to sync on several things where we actually we're in agreement, obviously. And then, yeah, I learned about turmeric. So listen to the show for uses for turmeric, which I would not have thought about as a daily supplement.
And we actually have a Survival Punk podcast drinking game for today. Take a shot every time you hear scratching on a cardboard box.
Oh, my God. Jordan the Cat was playing with a cardboard box, having a good time. once again, like normal, so if I remember, so the you can find this episode if you go to survivalpunk.com/... I don't know what the episode number is, so you can't find it that way.
No. It'll be the most recent one, though.
It'll be the most recent one. As always, if you like this, if you enjoy our podcast, stop by survivalpunk.com. And if you listen on iTunes, please leave us a rating and review. We've got one. I would like to have more than one. I know you motherfuckers listen, and I know you enjoy, because I've had people say, this is my favorite podcast, because this is the most electrifying podcast
in survival entertainment, jabronis.
That is correct, yes. If you smell what the Survival Punk is cooking, then leave us a rating or review on iTunes. And if you go to survivalpunk.com, you can see the links for it, where you can rate and review it. We would appreciate it. And if you do, we will read your review and at least your first name or username on air. So if you want to get read on air, please do that. Is that it? Can we?
Yeah, that's it. So yous guys get ready for Gary Collins part 3, sort of. Let's just go ahead and jump right into it.
Welcome to the show, Gary. So we've got Gary Collins back on the show again. Gary, how are you?
Good. How you guys doing?
Not bad. It's... Well, last week we got like a record, like 7 inches of snow, and this week it's going to be in like the 60s and 70s, so...
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, welcome to Middle Tennessee.
Yeah.
So, what, you're getting ready for mud, is what you're telling me?
Oh, it's muddy as shit out there.
Oh, yeah. My yard's like, it is like a monster truck pit out there right now.
Yeah. Which would be fun if we had monster trucks or dirt bikes, but we don't. So, yeah, so let's so this time, Gary, we got you on not to talk about your off-grid build, unfortunately, because I actually left off with a couple of questions I want to get to you about.
We might get to those later, just, you know.
Okay. I doubt it. These ones. So this time I've got you in to talk about sort of next level nutrition and, you know, fitness that, you know, like basically I tell people that paleo, low carb, sort of keto works for about 80% of the people about 80% of the time. You know, if you're sedentary, you know, and you're overweight, that's I tell people to do that because it generally works. There are some people that it doesn't work so well for. And so this is some of the stuff that you can tweak. Or when you get down to a certain body fat percentage, some of that stuff doesn't work as well anymore. Yeah. So I've got you on to sort of pick your brain about some of those things.
Okay.
And the first one I know you know about, and this is definitely what I'd call like next level. Like after you – this is I don't even really mention this to people when they first start out because it's – and you'll agree. I know I've heard you talk about it. It's not for beginners. This is definitely like if you're starting out, I don't want you to do this. But, you know, I've been dieting for years and then I've been hardcore paleo for the past couple years. So I made the leap and I started doing intermittent fasting. Mm-hmm. I do Dave Asprey's sort of bulletproof intermittent fasting, but there's still several hours without eating. So could you tell people a little bit what intermittent fasting is, why they'd want to do it, and what your take is on it?
Yeah, intermittent fasting is a a pretty straightforward concept, and it's basically, to keep it simple, I have an article on my blog that's pretty in-depth about intermittent fasting, but there's the main one is 8-16 is what you call it. You eat for 8 hours, you fast for 16 hours. So your eating window is 8 hours. Usually what that means is you just skip breakfast. Easiest way to do it. So your last meal should be around, you know, 6-7 o'clock at night. And then your first meal will be somewhere around 11-12 the next day. And what you're doing is you're just increasing the fast. And the reason you do that is because at night, you, in order for you to stay alive and, you know, in order to repair everything, you go into a fat burning mode because you're not ingesting any food. You know, you're not eating any carbohydrates. You're not getting any nutrition. So your body has to go to its primary fuel source, and that's fat. That's body fat. So what by doing that, in theory, by extending that morning fast out, it increases that window of fat burning. So by the time you break your fast, you've added another 4 to 6 hours of fasting compared to the normal American, if not even more, because every American eats about every 30 minutes, I think, now. So, you know, and that's the whole concept of it. But it's very difficult to do in the beginning for most people because they're not fat burners. You know, today's American is a sugar burner. You know, they're constantly eating. They're constantly eating processed carbohydrates. You know, they're always feeding themselves and not allowing their blood glucose levels to even out. It's this roller coaster all day. And in order to do that, your blood glucose levels, you know, basically have to drop to a certain point, and that way you can release glucagon, and that way, you know, you'll actually put in a little glucose naturally, but you also go into a fat burning mode, which will release some triglycerides. And if you eat a higher fat diet, obviously, if we talk in keto, which is a whole nother topic, you know, that's a different time, but that's all fasting is. It's basically just lengthening the window of not eating and shrinking the window of your time of when you do eat. And during those 8 hours, the best way to make it work is obviously you're more active. So not only are you eating during that window, but you're going to be active during that window, as opposed to a lot of Americans today tend to eat and be sedentary at the same time. So that's kind of how it works. But it's very difficult for most people in the beginning because they can't do it. They can't go 4 hours without eating, let alone 16. So it's something you have to work up to. I know people who do that every day. It's basically their eating lifestyle. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Your body will adapt. You know, your metabolism will adapt to it. So the benefits of it long term start to diminish. I haven't seen it work for the people who do it all the time, but I do it kind of all the time, but it's just because of the way my schedule is. You know, I work out in the morning, so I don't eat. I don't eat before I go to the gym. I'm getting older and it's harder and harder for me to eat and work out with a full stomach.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, and I never I used to be able to eat while I was doing bench press, for God's sakes, when I was young. I could sit there, I would eat a protein bar or banana while I'm at the gym. I can't do that anymore. I'll be sick. It just doesn't go well. But yeah, it's real basic, and it's a real good tool for people, especially trying to lose that last 10 or 15 pounds.
Yeah. I noticed when I swapped over to it, and like I said, I do bulletproof intermittent fasting, so I'll have coffee in the morning with grass-fed butter and coconut oil. So there's no sugars or protein in that to burn. It's just fat, so it just keeps you going in the fat burning mode. But it takes the edge off it for me and helps me sort of concentrate because coffee is awesome.
Yeah.
Well,
it helps speed up your metabolism a little bit too because you're getting the caffeine.
Right.
That's the whole point behind it. And plus to sell his coffee. So you drink his coffee every single morning, no matter what you're doing.
I both love and hate Dave Asprey. He is a marketer, son of a bitch. But if you study Bruce Lee, you take in what works and reject what doesn't. So,
yeah.
I don't buy his coffee that's $20 a bag. I buy Starbucks coffee. I buy good quality. So I buy the Sumatra brand, which is single origin. And I feel that that's better. I'm not going to – Dave, that's a whole long tangent. He has some things that really nettles me. Like because I listened to his Bulletproof Diet cookbook, and some of the things are like – it's like almost snobbish. It's like, sure, possibly if you did these things and you had the money, you had CEO money to, only eat grass-fed beef and, do everything else he says, then I see that possibly working. But, and it just doesn't work in the real life. But let's get off that. I noticed when I first started doing intermittent fasting, when I came to that first meal of the day, which was, 12 o'clock for me, my stomach was like just turning, like I was starving. And now recently, I'll get to lunch sometimes and I'll be like, I think I could eat, like, I'm not starving, but I'm like, I could go for food, and I don't do it every single day. I do it generally 4 or 5 days a week. And then the other 2 days I sort of take off of it to sort of reset. And, I've noticed like if you do intermittent fasting every day, you kind of get pissed at the world. Like, it's like, fuck you, buddy. I hate your face today. So you kind of need to break it up sometimes.
I agree. And with that, you put in a great tool. And that is for people too, is to have a cup of green tea with a scoop of coconut oil or butter or a cup of coffee. Because what caffeine does is it does two things. It'll speed up your metabolism a little bit. It's not going to make you a supermodel overnight, no matter what Dr. Oz says. Trust me, it doesn't work that way. And what it does acts as an appetite suppressant. So it does two things. And that's why it's a good tool, especially for beginners to use. And it does, it works great. The mornings where I have a cup of coffee before I go to the gym, I'm the same as you. I get home and I'm like, well, I could eat, but I'm not really hungry, I don't even use coconut oil or butter in my coffee. I don't need to. And plus I like my coffee straight. I don't like messing with it. But I will. I mean, I've done it. I've used to do it for years. I used to use coconut oil in my coffee and tea all the time. But just over the years, I just realized I didn't need it. And actually, once I kind of got to a point where I was in kind of figured it out mode, that I noticed that it actually made me too full. So I would I wouldn't eat till like 2 or 3.
Yeah.
Because that's what, because I'd gotten, some calories within that coconut oil or butter. And there's nothing wrong with that either. I tested out for a couple years actually, on protein timing when I wasn't trying to gain. I was just trying to maintain. And this is where things get real interesting. It's different paths, different people, and different places where you're at. For me, I didn't notice any difference, on body composition. When I fed afterwards, right after working out, as opposed to if I didn't eat for 3-4 hours after I worked out. But it was because I was maintaining. I wasn't trying to build. But right, if I was right. trying to build and I did that and add muscle, it wouldn't work. You know, I would have to feed within that 30 to 60 minute window, 2 hour max. You know, if I'm trying to gain, I have to do that. So yeah,
that's definitely like, so when I gave out my podcast on weight loss, and even with this, with intermittent fasting, I sort of prefaced both of those things by saying, this is generally for people that are mostly sedentary and looking to lose weight. If you're a bodybuilder and you're trying to put on muscle, I would not recommend intermittent fasting you, unless you're in a cutting phase possibly, yeah. But try to squeeze in enough calories to put on, you know, muscle in 8 hours is a lot, you know, it's hard, like, cause you got to eat constantly. So that's one of those things, like, if you're trying to lose weight, you're trying to cut those last 10 pounds or something, intermittent fasting, great tool in your tool belt. If you're trying to become the next Mr. Olympia, that's shit stupid for you, you know, and that's what I try to tell people, like, you know, it's different things for different people.
Now, I think you need to change the spiel on that a little bit. You're excluding people and you're going to lose customers that way.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
Hey, no, stop that honesty shit, all right? Knock that off.
Yeah. People everybody.
Crap, all right? You know, they want to be lied to and sold something they completely don't need, all right?
I do have a question about the intermittent fasting. Does it matter which 8 hours of the day that you can eat during? I mean, can you set that, like, at the end of the day, at the beginning of the day, and just not eat for the rest of the 16? Or is there, like, an optimal time of the day to put those eating hours in?
The optimal is the time that I gave you. It's the easiest to follow, and that's to have your last meal in the evening. I've reversed it, and I've used it with other people and reversed it, you know, to where your last meal changes. Like, some people have different schedules, and it still works, but it works optimally if you fit it into those time frames, I've noticed. Just because it's easier, because when you go to bed, you're asleep. You know, when you're awake, you have more opportunity to be hungry and eat something. So that's the best time. But you can kick it up to, I know people who have done it to 8, 10 o'clock at night for their last meal. But the problem is now they got to eat their first meal at 12 to 2 the next day. So it just shifts it around. Or did I do my math right? Yeah, that's right. So it just depends. But that time frame I've given you, the last meal 6 to 7, your first meal around 11 the next day, tends to work the best.
Oh, then I've been accidentally intermittent fasting for quite some time, because I rarely, if ever, eat breakfast, and I usually don't eat my lunch until like 1:30 in the afternoon.
Well, yeah. You know, that is, I would argue that could be considered a normal functional diet if we were normal people. You know, if we were living as our bodies were intended, I would probably say that eating schedule is probably pretty close to normal. You know, breakfast became popular when cereals became popular. You know, how can I sell you a cereal and something to eat in the morning if you don't eat till 11 o'clock in the afternoon and your first meal is usually going to be a full meal? You know? So it gets tricky in the sense of we've been taught for so many hundreds of years a different way of eating that we no longer really know what a natural eating is anymore. And it would be erratic. I mean, there would be times when we may not eat for, I shouldn't say eat anything, but eat very little for a couple days, if not 3 or 4 days, if we can't find anything to eat. You know, we would be out eating some grubs, maybe, you know, picking some, you know, whatever grasses are out there, some leaf plants that we could eat, maybe gnawing on some tree bark. But if we couldn't find any animal protein or anything else to eat, well, we wouldn't have a whole lot of calories. We wouldn't have, you know, we would basically be fasting or in a ketogenic state, period. I mean, that would be life. I mean, the easiest way is to look at dogs or look at animals in the wild, like a wolf or something, you know, coyotes. Because I used to, you know, I live around, I've seen them, and you watch them get skinny, and then sometimes they look good. And it's based upon what they have access, what they're eating, and if they can eat. You know, that's the way we're built. So our eating style today is built upon, you know, it's built upon companies. I mean, the way we eat today, it's based on products.
Products and our ridiculous 40-hour work week. I mean, Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of times previously at work where I was like, either I have to eat now when I'm not that hungry, or I know I have to wait, like, you know, 6 extra hours before I can get food or something. You know, it's like, you got to eat, even if you're not that hungry, or, you know you're going to be, like, tearing your face off in a couple hours.
Well, that's the problem. If you're fat adapted and well adapted to that kind of eating style, or, you know, what I call primal in my primal power right. method stuff, is that the odds of you being ravenous or hungry at any given time are very slim. I mean,
right.
I've gone, yeah. you know, 18, 19 hours without eating because I was so busy. And I just didn't even really know it. I mean, I was like, oh, I'm a little hungry, but I'm okay. You know, you don't have those huge, you know, those blood sugar crashes. You're very stable. Your body has adapted.
Yeah.
And it can use your energy systems in interchange as it needs to. You know, it can access that fat storage. When you're a sugar burner and all you do is eat basically refined carbohydrates and junk all day, well, that inhibits your body's ability to access that stored fat as energy. The energy systems aren't as fluid. And that's why I always say you have to be fat adapted. You have to be able to access your fat storage normally in order for these things to work, and you have to get to that point. And to get to that point, you have to kind of restructure how you eat. You have to restructure how you exercise and everything. I mean, that's why what I teach is I teach life simplification, but I teach life changing as well. That's where I like to separate myself from, you know, the Dave Aspreys and kind of the ass clowns out there, that I'm teaching how to change your life. And I'm teaching it from a place of education and knowledge. I'm not teaching it to you because I'm trying to sell you a 22-pound or $22, you know, pound of shitty coffee that is no yeah. different than, you know, an $11 bag of coffee somewhere else. You know, and that's the problem I have. He had to make up this whole just to give people an example of the bullshit that goes on and why I get so frustrated. He had to make this whole thing up about these harmful molds in coffee yeah. beans, which is total absolute bullshit. I mean, created this whole thing about you are harming yourself and you're going to die if you drink any coffee but my own.
Right, just right.
Like, you know, and don't get me wrong, it's, you know, it's marketing, but he just took it too far. And, you know, for me, that's what's so hard for everyone else too. When you talk about intermittent fasting, I've heard it explained 50 bazillion different ways. And a lot of it I've heard explained wrong, and not understanding the premise behind it. And probably where I've heard it explained wrong the most is with personal trainers, because it became popular for weight loss, but they didn't understand the concept. They didn't understand what it meant to be, you know, in a fat burning mode. They didn't get it. It wasn't sinking in. They didn't know the chemistry behind it, the biochemistry. Mm-hmm. And that's where they were just throwing, you know, grandma on it. And you're all, that's not a good idea. You know, grandma's 60 pounds. She's never worked out. And now you're telling her to do this. You know, it's just not going to work. And then they get pissed off. You know, the person they tell to do it gets pissed off because it doesn't work. Then they think they're full of shit, and it's just, then they think I'm full of shit because I'm in the health world, and it gives everyone a black eye. And that's where I get frustrated with the lack of knowledge. And I'm glad you asked that question, because I get asked about intermittent fasting all the time. Intermittent fasting yeah. and ketogenic. Those are the two main questions I'll get asked. And what the hell's paleo? Cause no one understands what paleo is anymore. Cause it's completely been bastardized into something that I don't even know what it is.
Marketing term. I mean,
well, it is, and I don't even
know. Term.
Yeah, I don't even attempt to live in that world anymore, because I use paleo techniques, but I use them on some of Cordain's stuff. But anyone mainstream paleo, I don't use any of their shit. I mean, I don't prescribe to anything they teach. I don't care, because it's too confusing. I just teach it basically as no grains, no legumes, no dairy. That's as simple as I can make it. If, yeah. You know,
I think people can't wrap their heads around that.
Alien theories on potatoes and rice and all kinds of other bullshit.
Yeah.
Knock yourself out. This is what I teach. It's an elimination diet. That's what I use with my clients. I use it as an elimination diet for people with digestive issues and immune problems, immunological issues. That's what I use it for.
Yeah. We're going to get into some of those digestive issues and stuff later. The next one, I think because of some of the stuff we've talked about already, you might be able to knock this out pretty quick, or you may have a different opinion on it. And that is carb timing. So I've been playing with it probably for the past year.
You're going to go blind.
I'm going to go blind now. So I've been playing with it for the past year. I've read some of the studies. I'm the kind of guy, like, I'll read some of the studies and then I'll just be like, fuck it. Let me just try it and see how personally it affects me. And so what I do is I eat either all of or the majority of my carbohydrate intake, which is basically sweet potatoes, plantain. I love plantain right now. You know, so some of those starchy root vegetables and stuff, I eat that at nighttime before bed. Like, that's my last meal of the night. And throughout the day, I'm more fat, protein, you know, leafy green vegetables. But I try to put all my carbs in the nighttime. And that's not just because, like, for weight loss issues, but it's also I sleep better putting the carbs at night. And that's another one of the big things I found when you time your carbs at night was you sleep better. Because when I'm low carb usually – you have some sleep issues.
Yeah.
And I kind of did. Yeah. So what's Gary's thoughts on carb timing? Good, bad, do it or not?
You know, for me, I don't pay attention to almost anything anymore. As far as I just when I'm hungry, if I feel like I want some carbs, I have some carbs. And yeah. But you do make valid points. And these are all really important issues for most people who want to lose weight. You want to eat your carbs in the morning. You want to eat the majority of your carbs in the morning and taper off as the day moves on. But I have found this with a lot of low carbers. Low carb is not truly a lifestyle. It's just like ketogenic is not a lifestyle. It's a tool. It's a tool to use in order to lose, either to jumpstart or to lose the extra weight that you can't get rid of at the end. Your body is highly adaptive, and if you start playing this game of I'm going to go ultra low carb and I'm going to be ripped all my life, your body's going to say, screw you, I'm going to downregulate your metabolism, and you're going to gain weight, and you're going to be bloated anyway, and you're going to be a miserable prick. That's what I'm going to do to you. So, yeah, and some people do, and everyone's different. I have heard that from many, many clients that they have to eat a carbohydrate at least a couple hours before bed because they just don't sleep well. What could the issue be? I don't know. I have no idea. I mean, it's obviously something chemical. It could be some people it is psychological because they did it for so long. They used to pound carbs before they went to bed.
Right.
But for most people, I've heard the same thing. Certain people, they go, I can't sleep unless I have, you know, 20, 30 grams of carbohydrates before I go to bed. Fine. Hey, if that works for you, knock yourself out. But on the weight loss side, usually it's the reverse of what you do. You want to flip it around. Hmm. But I notice when I start having sleep problems, the same thing. I'm not getting enough carbohydrates. And I usually tell people that it's one of when they start to have sleep problems, one of two things, either they're not ingesting enough carbs or they're ingesting too much caffeine or both. I kid you not. Those are the two things I can almost target right away, or that they're in a high stress job. I can nail down bad sleep to three very basic things. And almost to this day, I've yet to have someone come back to me and go, I was wrong and go, you know what? I still can't sleep. I did everything you told me to do and I still can't sleep. But yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with what you're doing. The thing is, your body, when you're ingesting carbohydrates before you go to bed, remember, you're not having any physical activity. You know, you're just, you know, you're going into just survival mode and repair mode. So your body's pretty much going to store that extra carbohydrate as glycogen, if you have some space there, which most people don't, but athletes do, or it's going to be stored as fat. But if you're not noticing any weight gain, there's nothing wrong with it.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, like I said, I've been experimenting with it. So I've not noticed weight gain. I haven't noticed weight loss. So I've pretty much maintained. So yeah, I mean, you know, I like to try different things and see what happens. So I think next I may try moving those carbs to the morning time as well, I guess my first meal of the day, or even drop intermittent fasting. Who knows? I'll always try new stuff.
Or you could just do what I do, not eat for 16 hours and then eat nothing but bran muffins for 8 hours.
No. Oh,
yeah. I would
like one every 10 minutes.
Your toilet wash it down with a crown.
Yeah. Man. Oh my God.
I couldn't even imagine eating bran.
No, no. I'm gonna make a new diet product. What's that?
I would never get anything done.
Yeah, you'd be in the bathroom all day.
Well, see, that's become an inside joke between me and James.
We had watched this documentary
that was following these three or four overweight children who were desperate. They were morbidly obese, and they were desperate to lose weight. And all the stuff that the doctors were telling them to do wasn't helping. And there was this one very clear scene that this one fat girl, after she just got weighed, she's standing there with the doctor. The doctor's like, "You need to eat more bran muffins."
I almost literally kicked it at the TV screen.
I thought he was having a stroke.
Oh, some of the things that come out of the health world are so asinine. And my mom just hit me up with one. She's oh God. Some of the stuff she comes to me with, you know, it's funny, and me and people who have, you know, work in health, we always talk about our family members because none of them listen to us. Everyone. It's like, well, I used to change your diapers, you know. You know, you used to eat your boogers when you were a kid. I'm not going to listen to you. You know,
Butt syndrome.
Yeah, you're like, well, you know, I'm kind of an expert in this, Mom. You might want to pay a little bit of attention to, you know, what I'm talking about. I've been at this for a while now. And she came to me with this list of, I don't know what show it was on, probably Dr. Oz if I had to guess, but a guy came on talking about combining foods to lose weight. So you eat a banana with spinach was one of them. What was the other one? I mean, just stupid shit. I mean, I was like, use yogurt on your baked potato instead of sour cream.
For what?
To ruin all your favorite fucking foods, apparently.
Well, and I'm like, you didn't remove the main culprit. You just changed the condiment instead of the main problem.
The sour cream's not the goddamn problem.
Yeah, no.
Not the problem, you know.
Oh, my God.
And I kid you not, but these are touted. I mean, these guys tout themselves as medical experts. They've got MDs, PhDs. And I shake my head and I go, have we lost our goddamn minds? Are we honestly this stupid? Where we actually listen to these ass clowns every day and give them our time and attention and worse, our money. And I'm not saying, hey, I'm the know-it-all. I do not know it all. I just know enough, and I know what works for me and what I've done with other people over decades. But that doesn't mean I'm all-knowing. I know basics. I never profess to say I can treat your you know, this condition. If you're overweight, you're looking to lose weight, you're want to learn how to exercise properly and eat properly, I can help you out on that. You know?
Yeah.
I've got it, you know, but am I going to cure, you know, your grandma's Alzheimer's? No, I will not even try that. If you're a type 1 diabetic, am I going to take you on and tell you I can cure your diabetes? No. But there are people out there who will tell them that. They'll go, oh, yeah, I can do that. And you're all, no, you can't. And it is. I think that's the hardest part and why, you know, I like that you're asking these questions is there's so much confusion.
Oh,
it
yeah.
Just world of just idiots out there. I call it idiots leading idiots, and I'm not insulting everyone. We are idiots. I mean, we have made ourselves very stupid today. I'm just as guilty as everyone else. I've done incredibly stupid things because I
but I see, one of my favorite moments on the show of all times, we were interviewing a friend of ours from Florida called the Florida Hillbilly. And he had, you know, weight problems. He had some other health problems. And his doctor put him on the specific diet. And this diet was not helping him at all. And he, while doing this, he found out about the paleo diet. And he got strictly on that. And he lost the weight. He had like chronic foot pains that went away. Everything on him was improved. And like a year later, he goes back to the same doctor. And the doctor's examining him. He's like, "You're in a lot better shape. I saw you stuck to my diet." He's like, "No, actually, I found this paleo diet." The doctor asked him, "What the hell is the paleo diet?" And he tells him, and the doctor actually is like, "You can't do that. That doesn't work."
Well, yeah. Well, that's the thing, too. And that's probably because, again, paleo's been – it's been hijacked. It's been hijacked by a ship of fools. And that's what's made it so confusing is – and people have heard me harp about this, is, you know, it's people who have no background in anything, have never been successful in anything that I can tell, and now they're paleo experts, you know? And that's the problem with our society today, just not paleo. It's that we get our information from people who are experts in nothing. I mean, literally. I mean, look what our country's being run by. And I don't mean to be political, but the guy has no experience in running anything. And we put him as a president. That's how stupid we are. I mean, the guy literally has a background in nothing. Nothing. Yeah. Being present. That's all he has a background in. And that.
Well, he won the popularity contest, so.
Yeah.
No, and that's what I hate to piss off people who voted for him or whatever, or think he's God, because we did it with Bush and we did it with the Clintons, too. You know, we've been doing it for decades now. We've been electing idiots for a long time. But that's the problem, is it makes it so hard for the average consumer now, is because everyone's an expert. No matter what. Everyone's got a blog. Everyone's got a podcast. Everyone's an expert. And they're not. And it makes it very difficult for you to decipher. And then the people who are actually experts, supposed to be experts, they're no better than the person who isn't the expert, because they're just as dumb. Because they haven't educated themselves. And that's why my first principle in the Primal Power Method is knowledge is power. You have to educate yourself. You have to know what the hell you're doing. If you're going to lose weight and you're going to try and be healthier, you got to learn something. You got to learn the basics. You got to figure something out. You can't just go off a book or you know, a website and go, okay, I'm just going to blindly follow A to Z and not know anything about it. It doesn't work. I mean, I couldn't go out and pull my engine out of my car and not read one book and not do anything and take it completely apart and be able to put it back together and have it run if I didn't know what the hell I was doing.
No.
That's the human body. I mean, that's the analogy. That's what you're doing to your body. You're wrecking it because you don't know what you're doing, and then you're expecting to fix it without knowing what you're doing. So, yeah.
I definitely hate people that I mean, like you said, knowledge is power. I hate when people will retort what they've been told their entire lives and, like, beat their head against the wall. So, like, you know, poor obese people that tow the, you know, the low-fat, high-carb, you know, ultra-high cardio. And I got a question later on about that. You know, they just tow that line, and they can't understand why they're just not losing weight. You know, they're putting in like 7 hours a day of, you know, spin cycles and, you know, eating their whole grains and all that. And they're just stuck with being obese. And you know, it's frustrating for them.
Yeah, it's the tip of the roast.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. That's, you know, the average American. And you know, it's interesting. I actually read Outside Magazine, which is pretty interesting. I really like it, even though it's pretty liberal. It's a liberal magazine. It really is. I'm a libertarian, and you know, but I read a little bit of everything. But there's a big article in there this month about sustainability and proper eating, and the guy's I can't remember, he's a vegetarian writing the article. Yeah. And he slams paleo and just calls paleo stupid and completely disregards it and says that the paleo diet is stupid because all we do is eat meat. And we're killing the environment because, you know, Americans are eating way too much protein. And I'm like, I went, what? I mean, the facts in it were so backwards, but he had some very good points. I mean, some of it was very good, but if you read through it and you actually pay attention, his numbers don't jive after a while, and then his numbers start to show that omnivores and vegans and vegetarians, it starts to kind of condense to where if you're a proper omnivore and you're eating, you know, sustainably raised beef or, you know, any meat source, and it's done properly within proper farming techniques and ranching techniques, so you have crops, you have animals, they go out and poop out there, it keeps the topsoil, it fertilizes everything, you know, it's a circle of life. That the environmental impact of an omnivore is no different than a vegan or a vegetarian.
No.
But you have to
I have one thing to say to vegans.
Three quarters through the damn article to figure it out. And if you're not, if you don't have the knowledge or like my background, and you guys would know it too, you would never figure that out. You would think, I need to be a vegan or a vegetarian because it's the right thing to do. And don't get me wrong. I know people who are vegans. I've been in places that are very liberal where everyone's a vegetarian or supposedly. If that works for you, knock yourself out. I do not care. I'm not here to convert you. You know, if you are, you're healthy and you like that, fine. But you're not – I don't like the attitude that they take. And paleo's been guilty of this too, is this I'm right, you're wrong attitude. You know, I'm all knowing. I know better. You need to eat the way I eat. And that's what I try and teach too. You shouldn't eat the way I eat. You need to eat the way you need to eat and what works for you. And that's where I'm a little different too. You know, I've been called dogmatic by a couple idiots. Chris Kressel. Yeah, he's a real flame.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And he had to read the definition. He had to read the definition of dogmatic because he didn't know what it meant. That's how smart that guy is.
Wow. But
yeah. Me and him got into it a year and a half, 2 years ago. And I think he realized I'm not the guy to play with. Just a complete bunch. But again, his attitude was he was right and everyone else was wrong. And it really just pissed me off. And he had taken paleo and turned it into something completely different than what paleo really means. You know, and you can define paleo however you want, but that doesn't make it right. Paleo is a term that is used in a certain context. You know, you don't get to tweak the term paleo to fit your agenda. And that problem I had with that was he tweaked it in a way that was anti-paleo. So now paleo meant you could eat grains and you could eat dairy regularly and beans. And I'm all, whoa, wait, those are the three things you can't eat on paleo.
Yeah. That's not even paleo. You've made something new.
That like nullifies every category.
Yeah.
And that's what I said. I broke out Dr. Cordain's book. I did a video on it and I went through and I said, here are what Dr. Cordain defines as paleo. This is the guy who popularized it. He didn't create it, but he popularized it far before Chris Kressel was wearing his, you know, hemp shoes in Berkeley, where he's from or wherever. Whatever, dude. Berkeley and paleo. I don't even know how that works. I don't even understand how those two mesh, but that's another story. What it did is it confused the shit out of people. So what do I get? I get a ton of questions on, well, I've been doing paleo, you know, I've been eating a lot of dairy, you know, and I've been eating a lot of grains and it's not working. And I'm all, oh my God. You know, so that's why we get back to that. You have to educate yourself. You have to know what's going on, because if you just follow blindly, you're going to go down a lot of wrong roads and, you know, you're going to screw yourself up. You're going to get aggravated and you're going to give up. That's what ultimately happens is most people just say, screw it, this doesn't work, and give up. And I have them in my family. I mean, I know people that are just like, what you do is too hard. I'm not going to do that. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, which I disagree with. Like, I don't find what I do to be difficult. Like, it's just natural for me. But I have people that are like, I could never give up bread or pasta. And I'm like, well, that's good for you. That's, you know, I'm happy and healthy. So more power to you. And because like I said, I don't try to force my ways on people. Like, I tell people, like, this is what I do. And sometimes they get that glazed over look, and I'm like, well, have a nice day. I don't – whatever you want to do.
I just want to – I don't want to be there when you tell – oh, I talk about paleo on my podcast. Just to see people like – I did not understand a single word you just said.
No, what is a paleo or a podcast? Yeah, people are still ignorant.
Is that like a spaceship to dinosaurs?
Yeah. I want to move along now. So I had a list of questions. I think I'm going to skip one, so the next question I had, if you want to tackle it like in a short answer, cause I think we,
yeah, go ahead.
So breaking plateaus, you have a client, they hit a plateau. What's your advice quickly?
It is, we've already gone over it, and that is intermittent fasting.
Yeah.
That is the easiest way to break, because that last 5, 10, 15 pounds for everyone, for every single person, is the hardest to lose. Yep. That is the point where you get to and your body's kind of plateaued out, and it will. It adapts. And so you got to kind of you got to trigger a change. You got to make it uncomfortable again and kind of kickstart it. And it works. Once you get to that point, though, and you're successful – well, maintaining it, I tell people your weight's not going to be consistent. You know, you're not going to weigh 172 all year long. You're going to weigh 172 sometimes. You're going to weigh 169. You're going to weigh 175. It's going to fluctuate. Yeah. That's nature. That is your body. But it shouldn't fluctuate from 172 to 185 to 190 to 200.
No.
It shouldn't be doing that. It should be within a rational window of 5 to 7 pounds. You know, more than likely, if you're doing things right, it will always be within that 3 to 5 pound kind of window. And that's what the easiest way to check is I give two measurements that I call the key measurements. One is around your hip bones and one is around your belly button. That is the easiest way to figure out what's going on. And that's what I do. Those are the two measurements I take on my body to figure out where I'm at. Have I over, what did I do during Christmas? You know, how much junk did I really pack down? And I take those two measurements and it'll tell me exactly what's going on. Cause that's where you're going to store primarily where you're going to store your fat. And that's where you're going to know.
Awesome. Yeah. So I've done the sort of similar to that. Sometimes I'll do total inches where I'll take measurements from, I think 5 points, the belly button, the hips, thighs and arms. You add them all together, and then you have your total inches, and then you monitor it that way. I feel that that's a little bit better than the scale sometimes.
Way better.
But
the scale's really
way better. Especially if you're putting on muscle, it's really kind of funky.
Well, not only that, but I mean, you could be constipated, you know, for 2 days, whatever. Or, you know, you could have eaten a heavy meal. You know, you got to really pay attention. The scale is never going to be truly accurate. Because you could be retaining water. You know, like I said, you may not have had a bowel movement. You know, there's so many things that could be going on that could fluctuate that scale that you don't know. And that's why I say that 3 to 5 pound window will kind of keep you in check, because that's kind of the variation you'll get off that if you're doing a scale. So if you're in that realm, you know, I'm pretty close.
Pretty close, yeah. Don't get too worked up over it. Like that leads to like, you know, being neurotic, and that leads to weird things.
Well, that's the thing too. Yeah. You don't want to, that adds stress. And that's another thing. I just had a client, actually a guy, you know, was asking me about certain things, sleep and weight gain. And it was considered, you know, it was in a highly stressful job, and I had to break it to him. I went, you know what, if you can't break away from that stress in that job, whatever I'm telling you to do is not really going to work. I mean, it will help you deal with some of the stress, but if you're constantly stressed out all the time, I can't fix you. I mean, there's no way for me to do it, because all that stress is counteracting everything we're trying to do. And that's another thing, that even if you're stressed out, that could throw the scale off too.
Yeah. All right. Next one, I've got a fun question, kind of. It's serious and fun. So it's on FODMAPs and gas. Oh, you know, so just you know what I'm talking about. Just take it over.
Oh, I can't remember the FODMAP because it's an acronym. What is? Oh God, I can't remember
it. I don't remember what it means either. I mean, certain like vegetables and crops are higher in like sugars that get digested in like the lower intestine, which is what produces a lot of gas in people. Basically, whatever the acronym means, it's a dumb acronym, like foods, onions. Oh, yeah, what is it? Anyway, whatever. So basically, the general question is, some foods make you really gassy.
Foods how do you, or grains mean ass power.
Whatever. Yeah, that's our new acronym.
Well, and it's a pretty encompassing list. Yeah, it's like, what, onions, eggplant, I think tomatoes are in there.
Yeah.
God, there's a whole list of stuff in there. And that became popular with the supposed nutritional therapy specialist kind of people. And don't get me wrong, there is some part of that is true. But they, instead of them actually understanding it, they all dumped the same shit in every book that they wrote. So everyone same jumped on FODMAPs. And it became super, like the thing you had to do, you had to follow the FODMAP diet in order to, you know, be healthy according to them, which was total bullshit. I know who made it popular, supposedly some paleo book that's really popular. That got the information from someone else, didn't even change it. But I can't make this stuff up. probably another reason why some of these people don't like me, but whatever. It depends. I mean, yes and no. It's one of those that FODMAPs, it's not for everyone. If you eliminate all those things from your diet, it doesn't necessarily mean you're not going to be gassy. It doesn't mean that, and it causes an over fermentation in the gut. That's part of it.
Right.
It depends on the individual and your makeup. And that's where it becomes highly individual too, because different cultures we have found have different digestive enzymes. They have depending on your ethnic, your cultural makeup, where you come from, your genetics, it all depends. I give this example all the time. They found an enzyme in the Japanese that they can process white rice differently than anyone else in the world. That's why they're not all fat and they eat a ton of rice. Well, their body's adapted to that nutrient. And they have an ability to break it down differently than everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so to say that FODMAPs are set in stone and that you have to avoid these in order to not be gassy, to not have gastric distress, you know, to not have unbalanced gut flora, as they say, I don't buy it. I don't buy it because I've looked at the foods on FODMAPs and I've had enough clients and I go, those don't cause problems with them. With some people, and they kind of relate it back to leaky gut as well, because they got on the leaky gut train as well. They're very trendy. I love these people.
Yeah, they are trendy.
Jump on a trend, and it's, you have to do this because this is hot right now. Instead of just going, how about I just exercise and I eat correctly, and everything should fix itself. You know, you got to jump from, you know, fad thing to fad thing. It does have a mod. It does work in certain cases, but I would say, like I said, it's the people who have a lot of digestive issues, leaky gut, you know, probably a gut flora, major gut flora imbalance. You might, you know, it has worked for people like that. But for the average everyday person just following a FODMAP diet, an elimination diet, I don't buy it. I don't think so.
I've looked over the list and, you know, like everything else, I think you need to be informed about it. But decide what works and what doesn't work for you and how that affects your overall quality of life. I know that onions disagree with me. If I eat onions, I'm going to be gassy as shit. I know that, but I like onions. So sometimes I'll make that decision. Like, you know what? Some sauteed onions would be really good on this, you know, hamburger, you know, without a bun. And I'll take that hit, you know, like poor Mike, he's going to have to deal with that more than I am, but you know, I'm aware that, you know, that particular thing affects me. If I eat I didn't talk about it, but
if I drink an entire quart of boiled custard in one night,
your wife hates you.
Yes, she does.
Yeah. And you know, another thing I didn't mention earlier when we were talking about carb timing, and I just want to mention it and then we'll move on. So I have an issue because I've been fairly low carb for so long. If I have carbs not at night, I'll be gassy that day. If I eat, you know, a sweet potato for breakfast, I'm going to fart all day. And that's just – I've tried to, you know, titrate up the carbs, and I and my friends around me and my coworkers hate me because I just get gassy. So maybe there is some sort of, you know, small intestinal, I don't, you know, whatever. So like I said, just
– That is very, very interesting. That is interesting that you see, you could be having gas at night, but you don't know it because you could be having the gas in your sleep.
And exactly.
Yeah. And you may not know it. And by the time you wake up, it's pretty much you've slowly digested that food, but it's all out of your system by the time you wake up. It could be.
Yeah.
And you know, sweet potatoes giving you gas, that's not uncommon because sweet potatoes have a ton of fiber. Anything that's high fiber is going to probably give you a little bit of gas. There's nothing. And that's another thing, too, I want people to know. Gas is not abnormal. You know, burping and farting is not – that doesn't mean you're unhealthy. Now, if you burp and fart all the time, yes, that probably means something is out of balance.
But, right.
You know, occasionally if you eat something and it gives you gas, that doesn't necessarily mean you disagree with it. It could be just a simple fact that you have not consumed it over your lifetime either, and your body has not adapted to that food item, which you would have had to adapted earlier in life. And trying to add it on later in life, it doesn't work because when we're young, we're highly adaptive. You know, that's when a lot of obviously all your growth, your brain development happens when you're very young. So if you miss that window of certain things, and this is where I get frustrated with some of the natural health people, is they say, well, if you have an intolerance to a certain food, you just need to keep eating it in small amounts in order for your body to adapt. And I'm all, what the?
Wow.
I'm all, are you insane? So you're telling me something that I have an intolerance or allergy to just to keep eating it. Go ahead and keep eating it. You'll adapt. And I'm all.
Your wife should eat a bunch of lavender every day.
Yeah,
I was about to say that's like telling somebody to take a little bit of arsenic every day.
Yeah.
Exactly. And eventually you'll become immune to it.
Oh, now, my God.
I, that philosophy is not too far wrong if you're young. I mean, if your body's developing and you're developing your gut flora and it's evolving, I would say, yeah, that's worth a shot. But to tell a grown adult, you know, 30, 40, 50 years old, oh, just keep eating it. Just eat it in small amounts. Your body will adapt. What a great philosophy. Yeah. Yeah. It's that's kind of the FODMAP thing is interesting. And the carb thing, it could be sweet potatoes. I have known a lot of people that sweet potatoes bother them. You may want to take sweet potatoes out and see if the gas thing changes and change to a different carb in the morning.
Yeah. I mean, that is something to investigate. I've noticed that pretty much anytime I eat anything that's like carb heavier, so Brussels sprouts sometimes will do it. Obviously, onions, sweet potatoes, plantain. I think to a lesser degree. I mean, I don't remember eating I've only eaten it at nighttime recently.
Plantain?
Yeah. Although I did make plantain waffles recently. That was amazing. Like, I crushed plantain that I put in a food processor into a waffle maker, and that was pretty damn tasty.
That sounds really good.
Yeah, I'm in love with plantains. But there's something to play with.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too. When you start mixing sugar with fiber, that's another thing, too, that will give you gas, obviously. Because you're feeding that gut bacteria. I mean, you're feeding them within the prebiotic fiber. And then you're feeding them also within the sugars, so you're feeding some of the bad bacteria and good bacteria. But bad bacteria tend to love sugar more. So, you're going to cause a little bit of gas within your intestinal tract and your colon because of that. I mean, that's just nature. I mean, as long as you're not, you know, crapping your pants or, you know, clearing rooms.
Yeah.
A little gas isn't bad, but I have noticed that a lot of people do get gassy with the higher fiber, higher sugar items when they're combined. That would be a plantain That would be a sweet potato. And then when you start talking cabbage, Brussels sprouts, onions,
oh, now you're talking sulfur. Yeah. Cabbage is another one for me. But speaking about bacteria, my next question is optimal gut microbiome. And I know this is sort of tossed around where, you know, there's no, and we've talked about this repeatedly so far in this interview, there's not one, you know, shoe that fits everybody, but there's a general, like, this is probably better for most people, and this is generally probably better for most people. So what would you do, like, if someone's trying to improve their gut health, what would be a couple of the tips you'd give people to look at?
Oh, gosh, I'm actually putting together a blog post. I just put part one out. It's all in digestive health.
I'll share that. I'll find that and share that.
I remember all of it. I wrote it a couple weeks ago. But the basics are, when it comes to poor digestion, you'll know. And most Americans today, we know. We've just gotten so used to our stomach aches and bloating and cramping and, you know, constipation followed by diarrhea. These are all pretty common. These are pretty common ailments that Americans face today. And a lot of that is, yeah, it's an imbalance in gut flora, but it's also eating the improper foods and being dehydrated. The biggest two are consuming too many processed foods and being dehydrated. Those are the two most common where poor digestion kind of starts from. And then if you throw in all the chemicals we're exposed to and pharmaceutical drugs, that's another problem. So those are like the three keys I start with. Now, to get your gut flora rebalanced and to a proper level, that's a tough one, because we have found that gut flora is as individual as your fingerprint. Everyone's gut flora is completely different and very individual. But there are some tricks, you know. One of them is eat foods that are alive. You know, don't eat dead food. Processed foods are dead food. You know, when you're eating nothing but, you know, things made from, you know, processed grains, which are nothing but the endosperm, which is nothing but the carbohydrate or sugar of the grain, that is dead food. There's nothing nutritional value in it but pure sugar. So that's going to kill, and that's going to set your gut flora off too, because now you're feeding all the yeast, all the bad bacteria. So get away from that, reduce that, eat foods that are alive, such as sauerkraut, you know, kefir, yogurts that are organic, that are raw, if you can do it, raw dairy, raw cheese, you know, raw milk, you know, and then you can do things like, you know, like pickles. I mean, organic pickles done right, that is obviously bacteria that's keeping it preserved. So your right. Fermented foods, pretty basic stuff. And another one that people don't do, which I do and freaks people out, is I'm a little dirty. You know, I don't wash my entire body every day. You know, get your hands in the dirt. Where we used to get a great deal of our bacteria is on the outside of our body too. And that's one thing that people
– A horny layer.
Yeah, because people think of our skin as this ultimate barrier that nothing can penetrate, and that's totally false. That's why, you know, dermal drugs are so popular today, because they have found that drugs work much better if you rub them on your skin. Because they get directly into the bloodstream without going through your digestive system. Well, that's how we would get our bacteria. You know, we would get it through the foods we would pull out of the ground. We would get it by getting our hands in the dirt, by touching things, plants, trees, animals. You know, we would be getting bacteria all the time. So I'm real careful. I don't use colognes. I use deodorant sparingly, and it's only natural. I don't use anything that's chemically derived. You know, I don't wash my entire body. I wash the specific parts that need washing when they need washing. You know, growing things like long hair and a beard. I mean, this is a cool one because, of course, my hair is a little longer and I have a beard now. But I started thinking of it because some statistic that men with beards have something to get sick less frequently than clean shaven men. Huh. Some weird study, and it could have been all bullshit because studies are all, who knows anymore. So studies are so tainted, but it made sense to me that your beard would be a house for bacteria. I mean, that's even if you wash your beard, I mean, you're not getting it all out. Your hair, long hair, you would have more bacteria flowing in there, and on your skin, Well, this is kind of your first level defense, and then that will get into your body. That'll end up in your gut. And the proof of that is where, as a child, where you pick up, you're a blank slate in the uterus of your mom. When you pass through her vaginal canal, that's where you pick up your first dose of your gut flora. That's where you get it from. It's absorbed through your skin, and that is the first mechanism of your immune system. Then the second comes from her breast milk. So that's one thing I tell people too, is don't be so anal in being out and scrubbing your hands with antimicrobial soap, you know, dousing yourself in every chemical you can find, because what you're doing is you're killing all that beneficial bacteria. Now, is there some bad bacteria too? Yeah, but guess what that good bacteria does? It usually combats and gets the bad bacteria that you may be exposed to. You know, I saw another thing about, don't do this, but eating boogers. They found that there's a reason why kids eat their boogers. And all kids, I don't care who you were, we all ate our boogers. Every last one of us.
Not every last one of us.
I did. Hey, when I was young, I ate them. I had to test them out. And what they found is that a lot of bacteria gets trapped in your boogers and within your nose. So what a kid is doing is actually feeding bacteria into their body as a beneficial bacteria. And to also...
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Just tell me when you change subject so I can unplug my ears.
Oh, my God.
Well, it is, and like I said, it's a little gross, it's a little bizarre, but it's just to give you an example of how we are bacteria. I mean, we're 10 to 1 bacteria. The count is 10 bacteria to every cell in our body. And then I think it's something like 100 to 1 viruses to bacteria or something. It's some ridiculous amount. We are literally surviving off bacteria and microorganisms. I mean, that's the human body. That's the world we live in. So that's one way, and that's how you get your immune system and your gut bacteria in balance, is by eliminating all the processed foods, chemicals you're exposing yourself to. And then you can supplement. Probiotics work great. I use probiotics with clients all the time. One thing I will heed warning, be careful. Probiotics have become incredibly potent, and I've seen them now. They're like 100 billion strain and, you know, 50 billion. That's way, way too much. You do not need that type of dosage unless you have a condition and you're trying to reseed your gut with a physician or a healthcare professional supervising. You should not be ingesting these on your own. You'll get very, very sick. It's a huge overdose. I sell only, a very small dose in the supplements that I sell. And the reason I do it is because simply it's a maintenance dose. That's all you want. If you can't eat fermented foods or you don't want to go that route, well, take a small maintenance dose. That will be plenty. You don't need to be taking 50 billion strain every single day. You're going to have all kinds of issues. And I've seen people, they go, man, I'm gassy. I got the runs. I go, you know, and skin breakouts. They'll get weird skin breakouts. And I go, it's because you're completely overwhelming your system at this point. There is such a thing as too much good bacteria. That's why you have bad bacteria. That bad bacteria is to keep it in balance. If you only had good bacteria, you would completely overgrow and become bacteria. So you have to have this balance between good and bad. That's what keeps everything in check.
Awesome.
That was too long-winded. That's a real complicated question, actually.
That was actually a really good-sized answer and very concise. Like,
no, the wind was fine. The nose candy, though, I want to edit that out.
You didn't like the – The booger one was very interesting when I
read it. Stop saying that word.
I mean, at least we didn't bring up fecal transplant pills or anything.
Look, I can listen to the word fecal all day, but something about the B word just makes my skin crawl. I am to that like half of America is to moist.
Nothing really bothers me. I'm weird.
That's the only word that's ever bothered me.
Yeah.
Wait, nothing really messes with me, you know? I'm the same way. I don't think of it, but yeah, we probably just grossed a bunch of people out. Right.
Yeah.
There.
Oh, yeah. Whatever. Like, well, for so sure. You said, but, you actually,
know, it was just to clarify a point, though, just to say, you know, how the body works, and that even the things that we think are really stupid and gross may actually have a function. There may be some sense to it.
It's interesting. You brought up a couple of things that I definitely myself do, like not going overboard with like the antibacterial, the soaps, and like constantly like those people that like constantly wash their hands. Usually they're the sicklier bunch. Like I mean, just like, you know, observation. I've noticed that a lot of people that are like chronic hand washers, like OCD people, generally tend to have like more sicknesses. And you know, that's just me.
Well, it's not just because they're washing their hands. The hands is just one piece of the condition. So they're over sterilizing everything.
Yeah. And the other thing was like to people that like, you know, especially the preppers and survivalists that, you know, grow their you know, their heirloom crops at home in their organic beds, you know, using no fertilizers or chemicals or anything. I generally tend to say, and if I buy something or I, you know, someone gives me something like that, I usually won't wash it. You know, if I know it has some, you know, good bacteria rich dirt on it, I won't go, you know, like from the grocery store. Yeah, I'll wash that.
Yeah, pesticide.
Yeah, but you know, just for like your like, if you grow tomatoes in your backyard, Gary, you're like, here, James, have this. I'm gonna like not wash it. I'm gonna eat it with the bacteria and the dirt and the soil on it. And that's I tell people to do that.
I'm the same. Anything I've ever grown myself, I don't wash it.
It's extra benefit.
We never really did. I mean, that was part of our spices was dirt. You know, and that's another thing is we used to walk around barefoot. You know, we really didn't wear shoes all the time. We did. I mean, don't get me wrong. You wouldn't want to walk around barefoot all the time. But,
you know, this reminds me. I was in a doctor's office recently, and while I was in the restroom, because I didn't have my iPod with me, I was reading the chart on the wall, and it was all about proper foot care. And it said, and I quote, never walk around barefoot, not even in your own house.
What the fuck?
I shit you not. I've been wanting to bring that up to you, and he just reminded me of it. It said, don't even walk around in your own house, carpet or not, barefoot, because that's bad for your feet.
It's frustrating because there are two flip sides to that. You want to be careful in the sense that we're very transcontinental today is the best way to put it. Humans can move around everywhere. Historically, we wouldn't have a ton of exposure to outside cultures because they were too far away, you know,
right.
And we couldn't cross the ocean, you know, we couldn't get across to places. Now a problem is that we're getting exposed to germs and bugs that our bodies, because regionally, we don't have the immune system for, you know, that's another catch is, do you not want to wash at all or ever wash your hands? No. Because if you're in LA and you're in LAX and you're touching anything, you're touching all kinds of stuff. I mean, that is probably between New York and LAX, that's probably the place where most people from all over the world come from. And I've traveled all of them. When I worked with the State Department, man, we would get sick. I mean, sick. Guys would be put out for 2-3 weeks sometimes. And that's one thing you have to be careful of, too, is you do have to be cognizant of the fact that we are being exposed to things that our bodies do not have an ability to fight by outside sources that we would not have been exposed to previously. And then you throw in the fact that we're having all these germs and things that are becoming antibiotic, you know, they're able to kind of progress. But that's what they do. That's what microbes do. They adapt. So the more antibiotics, the more you do, the more they adapt to their environment, and then they turn into something that you cannot fight. They turn into super bugs.
Right.
So it's a balance. I mean, I wouldn't want you just to, you know, if you live out on 100 acres and you're not exposed to anyone, yeah, you could run around naked and touch pretty much everything, and you'd probably be safe, as long as it's obviously not poisonous.
Right.
But as soon as someone stepped on your lot from somewhere else, you know, then you'd be probably screwed, you know, because then you don't have an immunity to that, whatever they're bringing with them. So it's a catch-22. It's a little tricky. But yeah, it's just use common sense. I mean, the antimicrobial soaps have been proven to just cause all kinds of issues.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you. You know, I wouldn't walk around barefoot at LAX. You would probably die or become a mutant creature of some sort. But, you know, around my house and stuff, I will.
Probably stupider, too. But that's...
Yeah, yeah. You'd get stupid bugs in your brain. So, next one, I think will be fun. So, supplementation without blood work. Yes, no, which ones? Which ones do you think are good for everybody? And which ones, you know, should you actually find out if you're deficit in it?
That's an interesting one. And it is. Supplements are a tricky beast now, too, because there's so many supplement companies. You know, when I was growing up when I first started using supplements 30 years ago, there was only a handful of companies. There wasn't a lot of them. Now there's a ton of them. And they're coming from all over the world. They're from everywhere. And that's one of the reasons I created my own line is I didn't want to sell supplements. Problem was my clients were screwing themselves up by buying anything they could find at Walmart and CVS and just counteracting all the work I was doing. So I finally realized that I better carry the basics and what I feel works in order to kind of help them. And that's why I carry them for. And I've done very well with that. And it works. But I only sell the things that I know that work, that I have used and I know they work. For most people to go get blood work for supplementation, basic supplementation, I don't think it's necessary because blood work's tricky. You know, we always get blood work when we're fasting. How about we get blood work done when, I don't know, throughout an average day? You know, that would make more sense to me because fasting is getting it at the most kind of optimal. The best way to put it would be at its most sanitary state.
Nothing's
really going on. And you can get your A1C and all that shit, but it's tricky. And I don't think you need to get blood work to take supplements, but most people today, you can conclude this from the average American. They're going to be micronutrient deficient, you know, so all your major minerals and vitamins, you know, your A, D, E, K, B vitamins, you know, your minerals, your copper, your zinc, some in iron, magnesium, potassium, certain things, you know, they're going to be deficient in zinc. So you kind of know that those are pretty easy to use and take because just the general public is deficient in them. I think 70% of the people today are deficient in vitamin D3. Piece of cake on that. A multivitamin takes care of a lot of the trace minerals and some of the things I just mentioned. Fish oil, because no one eats fish anymore, hardly. And if you do, it's probably toxic, you know, depending where it came from. You know, especially if it's farm raised, you gotta be real careful with that. I sell turmeric. Turmeric is my number one seller, always has been. And the reason is turmeric, it is such a great herb. It really is. And we don't get it in our food. We're not, you know, in India, obviously they use it in curries all the time.
Right.
But I found it about 5 years ago when I had my back surgery and I had my spinal fusion. I was in a ton of pain. I had to get off the pain meds because they were killing me. And so I started taking turmeric, and it worked. I was shocked, and I was like, holy shit, this actually worked. And I have heard nothing but positive from everyone I tell. I go, if you have achy joints, you're suffering from pain, take it, and take it every day. And everyone comes back and goes, I cannot believe that works. And it, of all the supplements out there and all the bull crap you hear and the magic, you know, take this, this will cure everything – the closest thing I've ever found to being actual real is turmeric. It's the only thing I've ever found. Now, will it cure every ailment you've ever had in your life? No, it won't. But it works for digestion. It works for blood sugar control, and it works for inflammation. That's where it works. And I've seen it time and time again. I use it for people who are chronically constipated. It will not make you crap your pants. It just makes you regular. and it works awesome. Like a charm, better than anything I've ever used. Naturally, prescription, doesn't matter. It works the best of anything I've ever used. You know, so those are the main things I sell. I sell a greens powder too, because most people don't eat enough fruits or vegetables, no matter what they tell you. I've heard every client lie to me a million times that, oh, I eat plenty of fruits and vegetables. No one ever does. And I use that. I use it too. There's days when I just, you know, I'm not going to eat a conventionally raised, you know, vegetable or fruit if I'm near a grocery store. So that's a great fix where I know I can get, you know, my, at least my 1-2 servings of it a day. And that's the thing people have to look at supplements too, is supplements are supplements. They're not crutches. You know, they're not something that you rely upon to counteract something that you're doing wrong. They're meant to supplement things that you may be deficient in. And people go, well, I eat all organic. You know, I get everything from the farmer's market. That's great. But what we're dealing with today is our soil is completely degraded anywhere, even organic ranches. It takes years and years and years to get that soil back to health.
Holy shit.
So even the organically raised food, a lot of it is 30 to 40% less than what it would be if the soil was healthy as far as nutrient profile. So
yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't think you need to get blood work, but it doesn't hurt either. I mean, if you can afford it and you can go get it done, you know, I say once a year. There's a lot of people out there who are big into biohacking and selling you crazy ass blood tests, and they want you to get your blood test every 2 weeks or every week, every month. No.
Yeah.
Unless you have a severe health condition, there's no reason for you to be getting your blood tested that often. What did we do before we had blood tests? We didn't, you know, we just, you know, we ate healthy and we moved. We had herbs. We still have them. We had medicine men who were the ancient form of doctor. I mean, come on, people. Technology's great, but don't go too far. It comes to a point where it becomes inhibitive. It actually, I have a love and hate relationship with modern medicine and technology. I think some of it's great and some of it's bad. And you just have to use your brain, you know. Why would you get a blood test that frequently and pay $1,200 for some blood screening?
Yeah, the price, it seems like there should be a better free market solution to that. Not, God, what's the company? Is it Wellness FX that does blood testing? And their prices are like, I don't know, $200, $300 for blood testing, like – I guess that's cheaper than you know, a doctor. What you said, $1,200, but it still seems like there should be, I don't know, until there's a better option. I'm not really like, I don't suggest people do it, like, which is why I brought it up to you. And like you said, I had an assumption that you would list pretty much exactly what you listed, with a few exceptions. Turmeric. That's interesting, and that I did not expect you to say that. I mean, the vitamin D3, yes. Unless you live in, you know, Hawaii, you probably should be taking vitamin D3, or the equator, and you're outside all day. Everyone else, like Americans, yeah, you should probably be taking vitamin D3. So the turmeric, and I actually just saved an article. It may be bullshit. It may not be. You seem to vouch pretty high for turmeric. There's something on turmeric on reversing gingivitis or gum disease. I haven't read the article. I just saved it for like later reading, and that it really sort of stood out to me. Like, oh, I might want to look into that. And the way you're talking about inflammation.
And you know, other people have backed me up, and you know who's a true believer is Jack Spirko.
Oh yeah, because his shoulder injuries or something, right? He uses turmeric for that.
Yeah,
yeah.
He heard me touting it. I know he heard it from other people, and he finally started taking it, and he went, "Holy shit, this does work."
Yeah,
and that's what I mean. The skeptical too. I was totally skeptical because it was a naturopath that recommended it to me. I kind of gave that look like, okay, I've been in this rodeo before, you know, here we go. And sure enough, I was pretty shocked at how well it works.
And then another thing is on the green powder you're talking about. So I actually pulled up your website, primalpowermethod.com. I have sort of like lustfully eyeballed the Athletic Greens product for a couple years, but I have not bought it because if you've ever seen the price on it, it's easily, I think, like $60 a month for a tub or more. Like $60 a month, maybe like the half price or something on sale. So I pulled up your supplement page and looked at your organic greens that are soy free. $34.95 for a tub of it? Like that actually that's in my price range where I'm like, I could see supplementing with that. And like you said, not, you know, supplementation, not like, oh, quit eating, you know, leafy green vegetables and only supplement with this. Like, you know, at $60, it's beyond that, like, supplement, like, you know, price range, but at $34.95, well, yeah, that's.
And that's where my background comes in. You know, as a former FDA special agent and working in healthcare for the second half of my career, I know a lot of this stuff. I know the inside and outs of how these businesses work and how, and I'm in the industry, so I know how it works. And two things that became real popular with a lot of these hacks, I'll call them, supposed health gurus, is that they found that the greens and the spirulina as well,
yeah,
that you can get it. They found that they could market up ridiculous amounts and people would buy it. And they tout every known to man. It will cure everything. And don't get me wrong, they're very good supplements. They're very good. But I've seen the markup 20 to 50 times, you know, ridiculous amounts. I've seen greens, like you said, for $100. And I'm like,
You know, I have too,
And it's not even organic. And they're probably getting it from China.
Yeah.
And that's where that knowledge is power comes in again. You really got to pay attention. And it's hard in the supplement world because there are so many shady supplement companies out there, and supplements are really tricky. They really are. And that, again, that's why I did it. I just got fed up with dealing with it. And when I got too many questions, I carried a practitioner grade, which is a real high-end practitioner grade, but it was counterfeited. It was counterfeited all over the internet. So my clients would buy it from me, and then they would find that it's like half the price somewhere else on you know, Amazon or eBay, and they'd be buying it there, and I'm all, I'll guarantee it's counterfeit. I went, that's not from the company, you know? And because counterfeits are a huge business in the high-end supplement industry and even in the low-end, because they don't have to do any of the R&D. They don't have any of the insurance costs, liability. All they have to do is reproduce something close to a product that already exists for pennies on the dollar.
Yeah.
So what are you going to go to jail? You're not going to go to the gulags for it. I mean, very few people ever get punished.
Yeah, you'd exactly.
Be surprised what type of criminal enterprises are in the supplement industry.
Oh, you'd be shocked. No. So sort of in a I guess a branched off sort of sister thing. So I've been kind of getting into smart drugs recently, like nootropics, and listening to a podcast on that. So I found out a trend going around, and this is kind of scary. And I'm sure some of your, you know, FDA buddies, FDA buddies are looking into this. So what will happen is these people will monitor like the scientific journals, and they'll look for like chemical equations of new smart drugs being tested on like rats, you know, like experimental test, you know, chemical compounds. And they'll write down, because, you know, in the scientific magazines, they'll have like the chemical composition of that.
Yeah.
They'll mail that to Chinese companies. 6 months later, they have a product that's been never been tested on humans, and they're selling that product on, you know, the supplement market. And, I've tried a lot of substances, but most of them, like, you know, aniracetam, that's been around for 40 years or something, you know, and has a proven track record of, you know, it does have a lot of benefits with, you know, nothing, like literally like next to nothing in the side effect range. So it's all benefits, no side effects, proven record. Some of these things have no record. Like they've used them on lab rats, you know, in the last like year, but that's it. That's scary to me. Like, and you can't trust that. They're coming from Chinese companies with untested things. They may not even be sending over what it's supposed to be. I mean,
no, that's the problem I have. And this is a bigger macrocosm of America right now, is China is crazy land over there. I mean, the manufacturing that goes on over there,
yeah,
they rip off everything. I mean, they've reverse engineered probably any good product we have. And the thing is, they could care less whether they kill someone, harm someone. They don't care. They do not care. And it makes it worse. Then you get people in the business world over in America who are greedy, which is 99% of people today, it seems like. And yeah. then they start touting and pushing this stuff, and they don't care. And that's the problem I have. And that's why I tell people you have to pay attention. You know, everyone wants the magic pill. And my clients, yeah. some of them get pissed off at me when I flat out tell them, especially the grossly overweight ones, I go, mm-hmm. there's no shortcuts, buddy. This is going to be painful. You're going to hate it. But if you keep trying to chase this magic pill, you're just going to end up dead. That's what's going to happen to you. And it will be sooner than later.
And that's this a few years ago. For this stuff called Fat Trapper and Exercise in a Bottle. Two supplements that you take instead of dieting or exercising that makes you allegedly makes you lose all this weight.
And that's why America's skinny now, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We got the lowest body fat ratio on the planet.
And it's just common sense. I mean, think about it. If there really was a magic pill, don't you think someone would have invented it and we'd all be ripped right now and be super smart with huge penises? I mean, that's what it would be, right? I mean,
that would be America right there. Hell yeah.
And that's where I get so frustrated with people is just don't be so gullible. There's no magic pill. There's no magic formula. And I say this on almost every interview I do. Mother Nature will kick your ass. If you try and shortcut her and try and play a game with her, you'll get away with it for a little bit, but you won't get away with it for long. And that's the thing that people rely on the stupid people to tell them what to do. It's just like genetics. You know, genetics, heck, the study of even our galaxy. We don't even know our solar system, let alone our galaxy. We don't know. We have mapped our genome, but we don't know much about it. We say we do. We don't know shit. I'll tell you right now, genetics is such – we are so in the infimental stage of genetics. To think that we can tweak and cure things by doing – no, it doesn't work that way. Our genetics are made for survival mechanisms. And once you start playing with that and start playing God, you're asking for trouble. You know, can we get there someday? Is there some advanced civilization somewhere else that may have figured it out? Sure, maybe. I don't know. But I'm not willing to roll the dice on that now. And take a chance on it. I know the proven things that work. You work within what's provable. And jumping on these experimental drugs and on these fads is just stupid. I mean, you're wasting your money and time. And what we teach and what I teach, it takes time, but you get results. I mean, it works. I wouldn't still be around if it didn't work. And that's the bottom line, and I'll leave it with this. To this day, I have yet to get a complaint on any of my products. Not one. And there's a reason for that, because I used it first, and I made sure that it worked, and everything I sell are things that I found on my own and then I implemented into my health regimen, and then I sell it to you. It's not the opposite way around. I don't go find something and just sell it. I use it first. Yeah. Crazy as that. I actually use the shit I sell. Man, crazy world I live in.
Crazy, yeah.
But where's the comment section on his website? I'm going to go fix his no complaints, complaints problem. Dear Mr. Collins, my doctor says you're an idiot. I will go back to my diet of bran muffins.
All the trolls are going to come out and hammer all my social media and everything now.
Trolls. God. Fucking hate trolls.
Oh, God. Oh, and that's why I hate the paleo world. The paleo world is filled with trolls. And that's why I don't even go there.
That's a problem when somebody considers themselves an expert. They can't possibly be wrong.
Yeah, no, it's I kind of wish that you were my Facebook friend, Gary, because I post a lot of jackass things occasionally. Like, so this morning I found this meme that was like, what was it? Back in my day, we had no vaccines, kids, so that's why children died. So I shared it with the caption of, "And that's how the human race became extinct."
No, it's like back in my day, we didn't vaccinate our children. They just died.
Yeah. And then I'm like, so, you know, of course, the pro-vaxxer, like, you know, Big Pharma came out to comment on it. And so I'm not completely anti-vaccination. I am that you should probably become informed and maybe you don't need – what was it? From birth to 6 years old, children have 36 vaccinations now. Like, that's probably too much. I'm just saying it's probably too much.
As opposed to the 10 that they were getting back in the 80s.
Yeah, the 80s. Like, when I was a kid, you know, we had 10 vaccinations. You know, like smallpox, measles, mumps, rubella, you know, stuff that would kill you. Not like, oh, you might get the sniffles off of this. Let's give you a vaccination for it. Like, well, that's – I'd rather have the sniffles because then I'll come back stronger.
Going to the doctor for colds. I know a lot of people who do that. And the thing is, your immune system's run down, and now you're going into a doctor's office that's probably infiltrated with multiple strains of the flu. There's all kinds of staff going on, and now you're going in there with a basic cold to get, you know, prescription Sudafed, and then you're going to leave probably with something much worse.
They're probably going to give you antibiotics too, just in case, just for, you know, let's give you some antibiotics just in case.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Yeah, it's nutso out there right now, and I know our communities are definitely different, but I think we aren't we friends on Facebook? Even though I can't remember.
I think I found you, but you didn't have a button to add you as a friend, so I just clicked follow or something.
I think I may have turned that off because a bunch of weirdos were getting on my personal Facebook page, and they would start spamming and doing everything else and posting stupid shit. So I think I locked it out.
I usually run people off pretty quick, so it doesn't. You know, I leave mine open, and I usually throw out my stuff on the podcast. I'm like, yeah, go find me. It's James Sickone Burnett on Facebook. And I usually only get like awesome people from the podcast, so I've not got trolls yet.
This was back in the paleo days. I did this a couple years ago, and so I may go open it up and test it out again. But I'm real kind of I don't know, with my personal Facebook page. I'm not a big Facebook guy, but you know, I got lifelong friends on there that I've known since I was like 2-3 years old. You know, families, you know, people who helped raise me and stuff. I'm a little iffy when, you know, I let someone on there random, he's going to act like a dumbass and say something stupid. I'm like, oh, God.
Yeah, I tend to be fairly public, which is, I guess, not that great being a prepper. But that's just the way I roll. And I've not had those problems yet. I haven't got any jackasses. Like, I had some paleo people add me once, like a bunch of paleo women, who all turned out to be super liberal and basically feminist, anti-white man. And we're not gonna get on that. We'll go down conspiracy world if we did that. But this was back when like the whole Confederate flag thing happened. I'm from the South. Yep. I'm from Tennessee. And they were like, you know, it's so racist and this and that. You know, I wrote this long, eloquent post on, you know, how it's not. I mean, it's not a symbol of racism. That argument can't be made. I'm sorry.
What, the rebel flag?
The rebel flag, yeah. And then they're like, and you know, I ended with, you know, like, I'm in the South. Like, I've never flown the rebel flag. I've never owned anything with the rebel flag. It's just a symbol for the South that we live in. You grow up used to it. You know, it doesn't offend me. And this lady's like one word response was like, but you're white. Seriously, that's your fucking response? Like, my huge, long, like, multi-paragraph response, but you're white. And I'm just, like, blocked. Get the fuck off my page. You're stupid.
Well, and that's where I have a lot of heartburn with that crew. And they don't like the fact that if you look at – and this is where I get – why I kind of made my own – I dwell in paleo, but I dwell in it because I know it works. And I use some of the principles of it, and I've used it with great success. But the paleo world threw me for a loop when I started digging a little deeper and figured out the roots of the most, you know, the in crowd. They're all from very progressive liberal parts of the country. I mean, wacko liberal parts of the country.
Yeah.
And that threw me. I went, wait, paleo and this. I went, they don't, the philosophies don't mesh. And that's where I found that there's a lot of fakers in there. I think there's a lot of in the closet vegetarians, even vegans, who are using it to make money, and their attitudes towards the survivalists and the prepper community is very negative and very hateful. And I have a problem with that. You know, it's like, that's not fair, because we're the communities that are actually more paleo and primal than all of you. You know, don't be shit talking us, you know? And I think that's why a lot of them have heartburn with me. It has nothing to do with what I teach. It's my background and that the fact that, you know, I'm an off-grid guy. I'm a survivalist guy. I roam in these communities. I'm a part of these communities. I think it pisses them off. And that, to me, is a problem with that community. And that's why I always tell people to be careful with that community. You know, do your research, because there's a lot of goofballs in it. It is a good philosophy. Yeah. It's a great diet, but be careful. And I've found a lot of people, they got sucked in there and went down the wrong rabbit hole, and they go, God dang it. You know?
Yeah.
They got back. You know, they go, I was following paleo, right? And then I started following these certain people, and next thing I know, I'm doing it completely wrong. I'm unhealthy again.
Yeah. And that,
you know, it's anything, though. I hate to beat up on paleo, but it's just, I'm in that world, and I just have found some things that I just really don't agree with. And some of the philosophies and the groups and the way they think and the attitude. And for them to say that, that's what I got. I got weird stuff like that on my social media. And I'm like, I didn't even say anything to you, you know?
Yeah. Why are you racist, Gary? Stop it.
Yeah, it was. You're totally right. It was always nothing really to do with what I was talking about. It was always, yeah, I was racist, bigot, something. It was always something goofy. I was sexist. Fraudster, huckster, this and that, and I'm all, what? Where's this even coming from? And yeah, it's a goofy community. I may open it back up because the people since I've been more in the survivalist community, that's where all, you know, a lot of my followers are.
Right,
Everyone is great. And that's one thing I will say about the community, even though it's not related to this, is they are some of the best people. They're the most, far as they're so conscious of my time. When I was in those other crowds, and just specifically in those because of the health genre, you talk about wasting my time. I mean, and they wanted stuff for free all the time. They didn't want to pay for anything. They would ask me random questions. They expected, and then I'd answer their question, then they'd call me an idiot and tell me I'm completely wrong. And it was all this baiting and weird stuff. I have not had any of that. None of it in the survivalist communities. None.
No.
And that's what is the big difference, I think, between that divide, is that our groups and the self-reliant people, I call us truly the paleo primal people. I do. I say we're the legit groups. We're the people who really want to use this information and change our lives. That other group, I consider more of a marketing and sell you something group.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
I mean, I've met some great people from those groups, but I've met a lot of like just psycho sons of bitches. So
yeah, you know, and there are some really great people in those groups. And you know, I it's just, you have, if you're going to be in that sphere, you got to be in those groups. Unfortunately, I've chose differently, and I've said I'm not going to participate anymore, just because they've pissed me off so bad over the years and some of the nasty things they've said. I've just I don't need you guys. If that's what you're about, I don't need that. Sorry, that was an offshoot, but it was to help the people listening to understand that it can get tricky in the paleo world. So you have to be careful.
You do. And with that, I mean, that's really all the questions that I had. This was really fun. Like, it was good to like, see that, you know, basically a lot of my ideas were pretty legit, and, I think we're syncing up fairly well. I'm going to try to move the carbs towards the morning and see what that works like. Who knows? But this was a real fun chat. Yeah.
And as an experiment, I'm doubling my intake of bran muffins.
There you go.
and eating your boogers. Couldn't help.
Oh, God damn it, Gary.
Oh, and on that bombshell.
Oh. There you go. Hey, I like to bring the weird in. I got to, you know, you got to make it a little different. So.
Yeah.
All right. But, well, as always, you're welcome back anytime, Gary. I gave you my voicemail number, so if you when your next book comes out, just drop me a line and I'll just run that in the show. Or if you just like, if you come across a neat article or something or something, just let me know. And shoot, what was that you were talking about earlier? The gut biome thing. Shoot me an email when you have stuff like that, and I'll share it across my social media so my people can read it.
Yeah, and what about that link to that article that he just wrote?
Yeah, I'm going to dig that up and then throw it into the social media scheduler share thingy. Because I actually hadn't read that. I did read the intermittent fasting one. Like, I glanced over it, and that was why I brought it up, because, well, intermittent fasting is one of those big things that people either try to jump in it too soon, or it's not the right time, or they're ready to make that leap. They're ready to take that next step. You know, and that's the tool that I would say go for.
Yeah, and it you got to find the right information on it too, because like I said, there's a lot of different ways of doing it. And I, like I said, I teach from experience. I only teach you the stuff that I know. I've done. I've taught other people, and you get a lot of articles that are just rehashes. So that's where it gets tricky again too. You know, if you haven't done it and you haven't experienced it for yourself, but you're telling other people to do it, ooh boy, that's a rough one. Yeah. And that's where people get really screwed up. And not to say that mine's the only way. You can take it however you want. But I know from a baseline that it works the way I've taught it. And at least it's something that I know from experience. It works for pretty much anyone who's ever tried it. So
I didn't. So I asked you all the questions pertaining to me, because that's really what having a book podcast is about. You bring on guests to solve your own problems. But so the one thing I didn't mention, and I not even pertaining to the show. So I actually am a shift worker, so I work overnight. So all the stuff I do is basically trying to counteract putting on weight from being an overnight worker. That's one of the things you gotta work on, because shift work will destroy your health. So I'm trying to counteract that, and I haven't ballooned up. I haven't got abs yet, but I'm healthy, and that was the extra monkey wrench that I didn't bring up, because I didn't want that to even factor into the advice for general people.
Yeah, and I've done shift work. I did a lot of it in the military and in the government, and it does. It messes your digestion up. It's tough because you reverse your eating schedule. I was eating at the times I would be asleep usually, and by the time I started feeling better, well, I'd go off the shift work and I'd go to days or swings. Yeah. And then
you've got sort of a jet lag issue almost.
Oh, it's really hard, yeah, because you're really fatigued a lot on shift work. And there's no magic bullet for it. It's just the way your body is, but to say in nature, to say that there wouldn't be groups of us that would be nocturnal. I fully think that humans, there was groups that were fully nocturnal, but today we aren't. So and that changes your diet. It'll change the way you process food. It'll change your eating habits. It'll change your exercise habits. And that's why I always teach, everyone's different. You just have to figure it out. I can only give you so much. And then from there, you got to take it yourself and figure out what works for you.
Exactly. And with that, it's been great having you on again, Gary. Like I said, anytime you want to come back, just drop me a line. Or you got my number now. Text me or call me.
Yeah, I'll make sure to stalk you and send you random text messages of hate. And,
There you go.
No, that's great. I really appreciate it, because I have a lot of projects coming up this year that I want to share that I think people really like. So awesome. I'll definitely take you up on that. And I'll even let you be a Facebook friend. You never know.
There you go. Yeah, I can only dream.
Wow. A Facebook friend. And on that bombshell,
All right.
It is time for us to end this interview. So for the Survival Punk Podcast, this has been Couch Potato Mike.
This is James.
And this has been our guest, Gary Collins. Say goodbye, Gary.
Thanks, guys.